This week on Words on a Wire, our guest is Alfredo Corchado. He has been a journalist for the Dallas Morning News for the past 20-some-odd years, covering Mexico from Mexico City. He was born in a village in Mexico, moved to the United States when he was a boy, spent his boyhood in California, then returned to El Paso, where he attended UT El Paso, and then became a journalist for the Wall Street Journal before moving on to the Dallas Morning News. His new book, Midnight in Mexico, is a memoir about his experiences as a journalist and really as a human being, going back to Mexico, trying to find the word home. Welcome, Alfredo, to Words on a Wire. I know that this book, Midnight in Mexico, took a long time in gestation, and I think it was a real struggle for you, but it really paid off because it's a wonderful book, and it really is both a memoir and a journey going back to find the Mexico you lost. You want to talk about the beginnings of this book and how it began and your struggles with it?
Well, first of all, Ben and Danielle, it's a real pleasure to be with you. Huge fan of the show. And I've actually been looking forward to this for a long time because, Ben, I think in many ways you helped me find my voice to write this book. This book was actually in many ways like personal therapy for me. I've been a long-time correspondent for the Dallas Morning News, 20 years. And in 2007, had received the last of four death threats. That forced me out of Mexico. I ended up doing a fellowship. And I think the distance between Boston and Mexico helped me kind of try to put Mexico in perspective. Mexico is my homeland. I mean, I still feel like I am a son of Mexico. And Mexico has been going through many, many difficult times. So when the interest came to write a book, it was very, very difficult to get away from the sidelines as a journalist. And it was very difficult to try to insert myself to, you know, tell the personal story. You know, what is it like to be a Mexican-American? Not a Mexican-American journalist, but a Mexican-American. And so oftentimes you feel like you're carrying, I think, the weight of two countries on you. It took a lot of music to try to kind of go back to certain places that maybe my family had wanted to forget, a lot of soundtracks, and it took a lot of tequila to try to really find myself, you know, find that voice in me. It was a very, very painful struggle. I mean, I think there were a lot of tears that were shed during the writing process.
Alfredo, you say you're a son of Mexico. I think a lot of people in our listening audience really don't know your story. You want to tell them about the village where you were born and grew up in?
I was born in a small town called San Luis de Cordero, Durango, northern part of Durango, right near the border with Chihuahua. And like many towns in Mexico, there's a big tradition of people going north. Men going north, women going north. In that time, it was more men. My father was a bracero worker. Started off his, if you want to say, career experience picking cotton, chilies in West Texas, New Mexico, and then ended up in California in the Central Valley, the San Joaquin Valley. And at the age of six, my family, I'm the oldest of nine, my family ended up leaving and reunited with my father. But I always tell people that I came kicking and screaming. I didn't want to leave Mexico. I mean, I had what I felt was an idyllic life. You know, we had dollars in the U.S. We walked the streets of San Luis de Cordero as though they belonged to us. I mean, my mother would sing, and people to this day say that when my mother sang, even the rooster stopped to listen. So in some ways, you know, I always wanted to go back. I wanted to reconnect with Mexico and recapture my roots, my culture, my language. And in many ways, I mean, you know, that's what really journalism has done. It brought me back to Mexico.
We're talking to Alfredo Corchado, author of Midnight in Mexico, here on Words on a Wire. Alfredo, but the return isn't possible, is it?
It's not possible because I think it is and it isn't. I mean, you have this nostalgia about Mexico that doesn't always meet the reality or what Mexico has become. And I think that was the most difficult part. And yet, having said that, I mean, I remain a cautionary optimist. Yes, Mexico has been awash in killings and the so-called drug war. But you also, I think, oftentimes in doing the worst of Mexico, you also see the best of Mexicans. And that, I think, is something that I try to go back in this book, you know, in Midnight in Mexico. I mean, I try to find the hope in Mexico. I mean, I think the title alone, for me, was probably the most hopeful sign. It's Midnight in Mexico, but it's the darkest time of the night when you're left still believing in the promise of a new day.
Do you really believe, I mean, you really have a lot of faith, and your book ends that way, that the rains wash away everything except our faith. What gives you that faith in Mexico, that optimism? Because your book, you know, when I finished reading your book, you could read it two ways. You could, I'm alongside you, and I want to have the faith you have. But faith is not something you can borrow. And that's your faith. And because there's so many things in the book that would lead you to the opposite. So tell me why you still have so much faith in Mexico.
Because I'm Mexican. Because, I mean, I'm, and I don't mean to be flippant about it, but having, you know, being raised on the border, being raised in El Paso, and being right next to Ciudad Juarez, I think it's kind of where you start to believe in the future. I mean, how is it possible you live next to a city that's, you know, the murder capital of Mexico, some people say the world, et cetera, and you're right up next to El Paso, one of the safest cities in the United States. We're the same people. We have the same aspiration. I think we all believe we can do better. When I say I have faith and I have hope, I'm talking about the people themselves and their resilient spirit. You know, as Mexicans, we're cynical. We can be negative. We can be funny. But I think there's an inherent sense in us that we can be better. We can do better. And I base faith and hope on the, not on the last 6 days or the last 6 years or the last 6 months, but on what I have witnessed as a journalist over the last 20 years. It's a much more open society. There we have alternative governments. We have people trying to hold government accountable. Is there something that's going to happen tomorrow? No. I think if anything I've learned in the last in my time in Mexico is you're just going to have to continue to be patient. It's going to happen, and it's happening. Sometimes you take one step forward and three backwards, but that's kind of the process of democracy.
What was the most difficult thing for you in the writing of this book, Midnight in Mexico?
I think the most difficult thing was dragging my family back to things that I think some of them, especially my mother, had wished was forgotten, was had been put in the past, had been buried. What led us to the United States, I mean, I think the single thing that just was the last straw was a tragedy in 1964 when my sister drowned, and she drowned in Holy Week. And my mother to this day doesn't understand why we could not find a doctor that week. And that's when she started questioning, why are we in Mexico, a country where laws only work for the privileged and the rich, where the crimes aren't being punished, where you can't even find a doctor in Holy Week, as though kids, children, people don't die in Holy Week. And that, I think, was her way of saying, let's just leave, let's focus on the future. But the difficult thing was taking her back and walking those same streets when my sister died, going back to where she had drowned, going back to the cemetery. It was very, very difficult. Also, you know, in many ways, and I just had a long conversation with my mother, it was difficult for me to admit to myself that I was wrong and she was right, in the sense that I always thought, you know, once you get democracy, Mexico will change them. Not overnight, but things will really change a lot faster. It hasn't changed as fast as one would hope. I mean, I still believe it's changing. But my mother was very adamant about, we're taking you out of here because we want to give you a life with more possibilities. where people can do better. I think I had always wanted to prove it wrong as a correspondent, and I didn't.
We're talking to Alfredo Corchado, author of Midnight in Mexico. Alfredo, this is a timeless book. I think I could read this in 10 years and still love it, and I could read it in 20 years when hopefully the drug wars will be a thing of the past and love the book. But it's also a very timely book, and it gives us insight into the drug wars that has been happening on our borders for the last many, many years. I've been living in El Paso, Juarez for 13 years, and I learned more reading your book than I have been living here
Thank
the whole
God,
time.
Yeah.
But what's really wonderful about this is it starts off with a death threat. You're covering the drug wars. You're covering, perhaps some kickbacks by the government, and someone makes a death threat, and everyone's saying, don't worry, they're not going to kill an American journalist. The problem is there's this little blurry area. Are you an American or are you not an American? Some say you're not. Some say you are. That must have scared the heck out of you.
It scared the heck out of me, and it was also very humbling. And it was this coming to Jesus moment, you know, when you feel you're an American and so forth, and I've lived most of my life in the United States. But it was this guy sitting there and telling me, you have good news and bad news, you know. Good news, they don't go after Americans. Bad news, you don't look American. Mm-hmm. And I think that really forced me to do a lot of soul searching. You know, not just what is an American, but why can't my own colleagues in Mexico have the same kind of protection? Why was, the American government so encouraging, supportive of me, which I eternally am grateful. But even the Mexican government was very, very concerned about my safety. And that, in the end, angered me because it doesn't compare to my colleagues in Mexico. I mean, they just have no protection.
All right. And we'd see images all the time of victims of the drug wars. And once you found out that your life was in danger, that there was, I don't know how you would call it, a hit on you, suddenly the entire landscape, even looking out your window in Mexico City, in your apartment in Mexico City, becomes dangerous. Everything just changes. I love the scene where you're driving and a diesel truck or a big truck comes on one side and another big truck comes on the other side and you're thinking, oh my God, I can't get out of this. How did you negotiate that kind of fear and continue to dig deep into these stories?
Well, I decided to stay for a week because, again, I have a vast family members throughout Mexico and friends. And I thought, if they can't, if this is serious, and I took it seriously because the person warned me, is a long time U.S. source, but I kept thinking, if they can't find me, will they go after a loved one? Will they go after a family member? So I stayed there for 7 days, and I was constantly on the phone back and forth, just checking with as many people as possible. It also forced me to go, to the underbelly, talk to informants, talk to people who I felt were maybe closer to the cartels. And if there was a hit, let them, put the message out. Hey, this is not personal. I'm just a journalist. I'm doing my job. What am I doing wrong? But the other major character in the book is Angela Quacherga,
right.
Love of my life and longtime journalistic colleague who just kept pressing me, you got to get out now. You got to get out. So it was this constant conflict and conversation that she and I would have. I mean, she finally convinced me that I was not, and I had to leave.
And you're still there. You still go to Mexico City. You still have your apartment there. Do you still get a little nervous and look over your shoulders as you're walking around?
Sadly, I do. And that's something that I always find, it's interesting. And once I cross the border into the United States, you feel like this huge sense of relief. Once you land in Mexico City, maybe Mexico City not as much as border communities, but yes, it does get old, and there's always that sense of stress and pressure. You're constantly looking over your shoulders and seeing, if everything's fine.
Alfredo, your book just came out in Spanish in Mexico City.
It comes out this weekend.
Are you concerned more now that it's coming out in Spanish that there might be a renewed interest in you and in a bad way?
Ben, you know how to just get to the heart of it. yes, I am. I'm concerned about the attention. I'm concerned about your profile raising, being raised more. You know, but I think you and Daniel will maybe have empathy for me, but I'm also concerned about how Mexicans will see this book. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a book written by a Mexican-American. I mean, I still feel like I'm a son of Mexico. You have the nopal, you have the agave blood in you, but, you know, Mexicans still see you as bleached by the American ways, and I'm a little, not as concerned, but the word is, I'm very intrigued to see how they see that. How much has Mexico really changed?
Yeah, and it's not...
Are they able to embrace their sons and daughters abroad?
Yeah, and it's also not just a question of being... Mexican-American versus Mexican, but it's also a class issue. You lived in Culiacán, Mexico, which is a real fancy neighborhood, very nice cobblestone streets. Frida Kahlo's house is there. And you lived among very, very wealthy people, but you still brought your working-class mentality with you. And in fact, I think you even very proudly told them that you come from a working class, and that kind of caused tension itself. Do you still feel that right now?
Yeah, I do feel that Mexico has changed a lot in the last since 1994 when I first arrived. And I think that's one of the areas where I do feel a much more acceptance of us on the U.S. side of the border and the sons and daughters of the left. Although I'm curious to see whether these changes that really started with the opposition party, the PAN, in 2000, whether they will continue with the return of the PRI, because the PRI is, under the PRI reign, you always have this debate, you know, who is the traitor, the person who left or the government who stayed behind and couldn't keep these people from leaving? And that was the eternal debate as a child. I'm wondering whether that attitude is still around.
It's interesting, the Mexican literary establishment tends not to pay attention to Mexican-American writers. And now you have become a Mexican-American writer, which is interesting. But you're in a different space because you're also covering what we might call current events, which is different than a literary thing. Do you think that your point of view will be valued?
So far, from some of the reviews that I've seen, it's been interesting that these are written by people in the privileged and the elite class, and it's been pretty positive. I mean, it's been pretty encouraging. And at least you believe that maybe they do respect that and they do value that. But I have to knock on wood because I think this is too early. It's really, it really does have me kind of on pins and needles to see if my homeland embraces me as a son. Because I think, you know, you still feel that sense of rejection by the privilege in Mexico, by the elite class in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that somehow this book will serve as a bridge between us and them.
Well, you know, the good thing about this book is you are a journalist and you are really revealing, giving a lot of information, but it doesn't feel like I'm reading a journalistic book. It feels like I'm reading a novel or a memoir. And I think that, did you consciously write it that way in order to be able to give us information that might otherwise be difficult for us to consume?
You know, it's a great question because I think as I wrote the book, I kept thinking, okay, my family doesn't really read. How do I make sure that my brothers, my sisters read this book? And so I did try to give it more of that novel approach, but oftentimes it was just the writing that, would take me there. And the other thing was finding, having clubs or having readers who would bring, give me back a lot of feedback. And there was always this search for the universal, search for home. And not because Ben is there, but Ben played a very, very key role in helping me find the voice because of his experience as a fiction writer. I mean, he's a brilliant fiction writer.
Right.
I'm a nonfiction, but oftentimes Ben would come back and say, you're being a journalist, be a human being.
Yeah,
I think that was invaluable.
You know, even that that scene, your family owned a restaurant here in El Paso, and there was a small-time smuggler, I forget her name, that would come into the restaurant with bottles of Malbec. Yeah, and even all that information that she gave in the background, you filtered it through her character, which is a novelistic device, and it just makes it's a great read, and I'm really glad you wrote this book.
Well, thank you, Daniel. I mean, I'm serious. I really appreciate that. Coming from the two of you, es como crema, ¿no?
Thank you for being on our show, Words on a Wire, today, Alfredo. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you,
Alfredo. Un abrazo, Ben.
Un abrazo. Okay.